your dreams are bigger, bolder, and more badass than the life you're living now. But something just keeps getting in the way. Join certified coach and former therapist Diane Wingert for the Driven Woman podcast. She'll show you how to get rid of whatever is holding you back so you can stop spinning your wheels and up-level your life. Get ready to hop in and buckle up. This is the Driven Woman podcast, and we're heading for the fast lane.
Well, hello and welcome back to all my driven women. How are you? Hey, am I the only one who's been thinking about how much I've overeaten? Not just during the holidays, like always, but like, honestly, the whole time we've been in quarantine. Now, it's not just the extra weight gain, it's the energy levels that rise and fall and the brain fog and all of that that goes with it. And if you're anything like me, you've been looking for answers for this stuff for a lot longer than you've probably known you have ADHD, right? So I heard about something called intermittent fasting, and I became really curious about it. So I felt motivated since it's the start of a new year. It's a good time to improve my health habits. So I've invited an expert to give us the down low on intermittent fasting, otherwise known as IF. Today, we will be joined by Marisa Moon, who is a certified primal health coach, a fellow podcaster, and a fellow driven woman with an ADHD brain. Here's what you're going to hear: how intermittent fasting and sleep work together to normalize our hormones and weight. What digestive issues and, as Marisa says, a foggy, lazy, spacey brain with a tendency towards depression have in common? I got a hint for you. What works for the gut works for the brain. Why intermittent fasting works better than keto or paleo for brain fog and stable energy, and how even if you are the queen of instant gratification, you too can make IF work if you do it the way Marisa teaches. In the show notes, you will find all the ways that you can connect with her, including a fantastic reset manual for intermittent fasting freedom that she has for us. Before we get into the conversation with Marisa, I want to make sure that we read today's pod praise from listener Rebecca Weiner, who says, "The Driven Woman Podcast is soul talk for strong women. The Driven Woman Podcast is amazing. Diane is insightful, relatable, and hilarious, and she makes tough truths bearable and embraceable." Well, thank you for that fantastic pod praise, Rebecca. And as promised, if you are a business owner and you give us a review, I'm going to shout you out. Rebecca's business is Learn, Play, Grow Consulting, and she can be found on Instagram at Learn, Play, Grow Consulting. Those are in the show notes as well. Where's your review, driven woman? I'm waiting. Okay, without any further delay, a shiny new conversation with my wonderful guest, Marisa Moon, is awaiting us right now. I want to welcome Marisa Moon, who is a health coach who specializes in something that I have been thinking about for a hot minute, but haven't been able to do yet. She is an expert in intermittent fasting. And one of the things that we're going to talk about today is intermittent fasting for the ADHD brain. So welcome, Marisa.
Hey, it's so great to be here, Diane. Thank you for your curiosity and interest in this topic. It means a lot to me.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, we both have ADHD, disclaimer here. And I think for those of us who have this brain, we usually go on a lifelong quest for all the different things that can help us with focus, help us with energy, help us with just really achieving our goals, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's exactly what led me to it to begin with. And everything we're going to talk about today in regards to this effect intermittent fasting has on the brain and mental energy really applies to anyone who's struggling with mental energy or just knows they're a few clicks away from really like turning things on up there. And that's far too many of us today because we're just spread too thin. We have too many tabs open. We are wondering how we're going to get through it. And I think this is really a tool that productivity coaches should be sharing for sure. Yep.
Absolutely. I wish more of us were, but I can only do my part for my little corner of the internet. But before we get into the specifics of intermittent fasting for all brains, really, could you tell us what your personal history is and why did you become a health coach? What got you interested in intermittent fasting and maybe a little bit about your own personal experience with it?
Sure. I came about it in sort of like a hesitant way that was very roundabout because I was first dealing with digestive issues. I had embarrassing symptoms. No woman really wants to go through ever, but I wanted to get to the bottom of it. And I started learning about how many people have food sensitivities today. And a lot of the clues were leading me to suspect I had a gluten sensitivity, which was like heartbreaking. I'm Italian. I love pasta and bread and food. And I was like, how could I possibly give up gluten? But, you know, I did have the courage one day to try it. And I thought, what the heck? I could just eat it if it doesn't work. And it was almost immediate in the resolution of my symptoms in my gut. And so I then continued down this path to learn about the paleo diet and ancestral health. And that made a lot of sense to me because I did grow up in a very like culture rich, traditional family who cooks from scratch and knows where their food comes from. And so I was like, wow, why aren't we more curious about the ingredients that are in our food or where it's coming from? And so I just ventured down that path and I learned about intermittent fasting, but I didn't like the idea of intermittent fasting. I was like, what? Why would I purposely not eat? I love food. I would
That's
never.
That's why I lured you here to convince me because it's a hard sell, girl.
Yeah, no, I love eating and I love food. So to me, it was just not immediately anything I wanted to try. And over the years, I was a food blogger, not yet a health coach. And I was having trouble reaching my goals, my own personal like self-development goals and things that I really wanted to improve in my life and in my brain. I was diagnosed with ADHD in my late 20s and it made so much sense of my life. It was like,
yeah, it's usually the great big light bulb moment where you're like, so that's why, and all the dots just connect themselves at once. Yeah.
It was, you know, you're kind of like, it's inevitable you're going to cry for most of us. Not in the doctor's office. I didn't. I just was like, I knew it. And then, you know, I wanted to tell my family and I wanted to, that's when the tears came. I just kind of felt like I was screwed up for a second there. And then I realized, you know what? I can now go forward with a better understanding of myself and do things differently. And that's exactly what I did. It just is an ever-changing, ever-evolving process. And it is for everyone. But I think when you have ADHD anywhere on the spectrum, it's like we always have to learn the new hacks and tricks and the how to talk to the little voice in our head and how to adapt because we are not naturally adaptable. And life forces us to adapt. And so we're always like having to go back to square one and relearn these new things and methods and find new strategies. And for me, the mental energy and stamina was always a problem, even with stimulant medication, which I also resisted. I did not want to be someone who relied on stimulant medication on a daily basis.
Because you're a real independent, go-getter, self-sufficient person, and medication means you're cheating or...
I just was worried about the long-term consequences on my health. That's where my initial concerns came from. But it wasn't so much about what other people think or just that I would have an advantage because it didn't really feel like an advantage. I just was concerned that I'd have consequences down the line, but
it's
over time.
It's also, tell me if this is right for you too, Marisa. It's like, if I take the prescription and I open the bottle and I swallow the pill and I actually feel better, am I confirming what I've always suspected? There's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like people say, I don't,
it's okay.
Yeah.
That I have met. It's just that every time I swallow that pill, it's a reminder that I'm not completely okay without this. I'm like,
oh no, that's, it's very that's true.
That's why mindset work is so important for everyone. And I can see that you've done that because it's like your curiosity kicks in. Like, okay, I have these digestive issues. This is uncomfortable. This is embarrassing. This can't be normal. You didn't think there's something wrong with me. You're like, this is a problem. Mm-hmm. And there's a solution. Mm-hmm. And your curious brain, which I think is one of the better traits about ADHD, just went to work. Mm-hmm. And the same thing. It's like, okay, I've got this foggy, lazy, spacey brain.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out what works for one works for the other.
Yeah. And you said it. It's like foggy, lazy. I have a tendency towards depression. I always did. That's why I dropped out of college 3 times, even though I was extremely driven. I would just fall into these deep, dark despairs. And it still happens to me now when I try to stop my medication. And so that's kind of it's exactly what you just described, although I've never really described it to myself that way. It's a wake up call. Without the medication, I am not myself. That is not me. I am not that depressed person. That is not me at all. And so I do think that is one of the main reasons I was okay with taking it daily then, because I feel more like myself.
And you know what? That's all the thought that we have to put into it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to go down that road to stigma, shame, you know, there's something wrong. It's like, I mean, I really believe that until we decide, hey, some people have a PC, I have a Mac. Some people drive a Toyota, I drive a Tesla. Like, I don't actually drive a Tesla for the record, but like your brain simply works differently than other brain. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong, but it does mean you do need to figure out what it needs to function at its best. Now, before we go further into this, you used a couple of terms that not everybody may be familiar with. So I want to make sure we break those down so everyone can stay with us. One is the intermittent fasting. We need to define that. 2 is the paleo. We need to define that. And 3 is, I think you said ancestral
health. Yeah.
Ancestral health. Could you just give us quick definitions for those that aren't familiar?
Totally. So I'll start with the paleo diet. And the paleo diet has all sorts of stigma attached to it. And the media kind of went wild with it. So if you Google it, for instance, you're going to see lots of good, lots of bad. And it's very simple. It's just been commercialized because of diet books and bloggers and all that stuff. But the concept is based on the lifestyle and dietary choices of humans that lived before modern life and civilization. So that's from the Paleolithic time period in our ancient history. That's where the word paleo comes from. And ancestral health is like the overarching beyond paleo. What can we learn from our greatest, oldest ancestors before the times of chronic disease, before the times of farming, manufacturing, industrialization, and all of that?
Supersize what made
them,
me.
Yeah, what made them robust and strong and vital that we are missing today? And what can we do today to incorporate that? And so that, to me, is home base. You know, that is the answer to all my questions. That finally helps me put an end to all the confusion out there, because I'm like, how long has it been in our diet, in our environment, in our life? And, that's how I know if it belongs here or not. And that's kind of a relief for me, because there's just too much noise out there in the world of health and nutrition. And I want it simpler.
It does make things simple. And when you think about it, if all you have to do is look around. You don't even have to go out, because few of us are at this point, but just even scrolling on a newsreel or social media, it's undeniable that we have more mental health problems than ever. It is undeniable that we have more chronic medical problems than ever, the kind that make people seriously ill and kill them. And we're getting heavier. We're getting slower. We're getting dumber. I mean, all of the test scores at all the schools. And it's like, there's got to be something really systemic if it's affecting everybody. What is making us sad, sick, fat, and depressed? Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's only one thing that all of us do, and that's eat, right? Mm-hmm. And the things that have made people sad, sick, slow, and depressed are basically modern conveniences in the way we're treating food. But I think we didn't quite define what intermittent fasting is.
No, yet. We didn't. And that's a good segue, because intermittent fasting is also inspired by ancestral health. And that's why it makes complete sense. Never before in history, until this modern age, when food was readily available, we had preservatives, refrigerators, stores we could buy food from. Never before were we able to eat around the clock. It just was not a luxury that humans had in our past. And so genetically, we are designed to have breaks from food. And that is when certain adaptations happen in the body to make us stronger. And so intermittent fasting is a simple way to say you have this on and off eating pattern in the same day where you are intentionally taking longer breaks between your meals, typically overnight, because you're already sleeping 6, 7, 8 hours. And so you take advantage of that time, add a couple of hours before you go to bed, just try and stop eating, try to stop the night snacking. So you got maybe 3 hours right there. 7 hours you're sleeping. That's 10 hours already. Try to add a few more hours in the morning. You're already at 13 hours intermittent fasting.
What's the goal? How many hours do we want it to be?
The science shows that 14 to 18, depending on what someone's goals are. If we're talking about insulin resistance and pre-diabetes and type 2 diabetes, you'll often see recommendations to go longer than that, like 20 hours, 3-day fasts, things like that. But we see a lot of the benefits happening around 14 hours, which is really, really motivational, because anyone can do 12 hours now, like without changing much in their life. 12 hours is easy and you will already have benefits from that. But if you just add on a couple more, you can experience a lot of the things that I'm going to be talking about today, including, you know, enhanced mental energy and repair from if you have consistent injuries, lots of inflammation, mood disorders, and problems with stress tolerance. This can help in a lot of ways. And I could go into the many reasons, but I think that's a good place to start, is just intermittent fasting is also a diet fad right now. So don't get swept up in all of the terminology. Don't get swept up in the million methods and the Facebook groups and people telling you, you have to do it this way, you have to do it that way. I'm living proof, and I've coached thousands of people how to do intermittent fasting. And I teach the most flexible intermittent fasting lifestyle there is, because that's the only way it will become part of your life forever. If it can change and flow with your needs, your schedule, your mood. And that's really what we need from it, so that it lasts, unlike every other diet.
It's true. And also, I think, you know, for people with ADHD, I mean, we do have a tendency to be impulsive and we do have a tendency to jump on whatever bandwagon happens to be rolling through town. And, you know, a lot of us struggle with impulse control. When it comes to eating. And, you know, there's a distractibility, and a lot of people with ADHD have anxiety. I don't have to tell you, with this long-term quarantine situation, there's a whole lot of comfort food eating going on, including at my house. And so it's like, okay, maybe we don't have diabetes yet. Maybe we don't have high blood pressure yet. Maybe all we have is a little more upholstery around the middle than we'd like to. And maybe we've read one of the books out there, like Wheat Belly or Grain Brain. And it's like, you know what? I think this is probably not too good for me to eat like this. Maybe I don't have to wait until I have a serious problem. Maybe I can kind of start to pull back on the throttle now. What do you think the benefits are specifically for the ADHD brain, regardless of whether other health issues may or may not be present?
Well, without an hour to get into everything, I'm going to try and hit the most important and obvious points right up front.
Great.
intermittent fasting works in a lot of ways, just like exercise works. They are both something called a hormetic stressor. So they apply acute short-term stress that is challenging the body, but brief enough so that the body has time to recover and adapt in response to the stressor to prepare for future stressors like that. And exercise is a proven therapy and a remedy for the ADHD brain. A lot of the reasons that fasting also is because it increases blood flow to the advanced regions of the brain where ADHD individuals struggle with energy usage and neurotransmitters like dopamine, norepinephrine, which also exercise and fasting stimulate norepinephrine. So that makes us feel more awake in the morning. If we don't blunt it by eating something right when we wake up, we will continue to produce more norepinephrine, and it will make us take our day more seriously because we will have alertness that we are typically lacking. And there are further benefits because intermittent fasting, depending on the person and the context of your diet and how long you're fasting, can get you in a state called ketosis. So the keto diet is also trending, but intermittent fasting gets you into this state of fat burning known as ketosis without eating a keto diet. It happens because you go past a certain number of hours, 8 to 12 hours, depending on the person, and you force your metabolism into a natural process of making ketones from your own body fat. That's what our fat is there for. Our fat is there for energy.
Storage.
Yeah, it's storage.
Because we didn't used to. I mean, if you think, you know this, obviously, but thinking about our ancient ancestors, they could go like long periods of time without eating. So when there was food, especially flesh food from an animal, they would eat as much as possible, and then they'd wear it around for a while and they'd slowly burn it off until they could eat like that again.
You're absolutely right. The problem is the way that we've been trained to eat and diet has been one that requires us to be glucose dependent, sugar dependent, carb dependent. That's why we've been told to eat every 3 hours, snack between meals, and eat so frequently. It's because if we have a diet that's based on grains, like we've been taught in the old food pyramid, and we have a diet that's high in sugar and things that are processing so quickly with that as our fuel.
Like fruit, for example, right?
Yeah, even fruit is also sugar as well. But it starts to actually turn off genetic switches that we have that know how to use body fat for energy. So there's a couple of things going on there without going too far into the science. The important things to know is, when you eat something with carbohydrates, your body produces insulin. And insulin actually stops you from burning fat, and it stores any extra carbohydrates that you can't store, which, by the way, we have very limited storage for carbohydrates. It converts it into body fat. Because we have endless storage space for body fat, but not endless space for carbs.
I have never heard before. And it's like, wait, what? We don't have much space for carbohydrates. It's like, oh, that's the self-help section on the shelf. Yeah, that's already full. You're going to have to put it somewhere else.
It converts into triglycerides and stores it as body fat.
Oh, mama.
I know. It's crazy. So insulin in production means you cannot possibly physiologically burn body fat, but also that you are very likely storing more fat. And so even on a low-calorie diet, someone would be eating frequently every 2-3 hours and producing insulin every 2-3 hours. And so they are never in a state of fat burning. Their brain is always telling them they need more carbohydrates, they need more sugar, they need more cravings, they have to eat, they have to eat. But when you turn off that requirement of insulin by doing intermittent fasting or by doing a keto diet, finally those signals of hunger and cravings and appetite get turned off. Genetic switches get turned on and your body starts using fat for fuel like it was designed to do. And ketones, the actual little molecules that we make from body fat, from our metabolism makes from body fat, we can use those in our brain so easily. They pass through this thing called the blood-brain barrier. And the brain cells just love them. And we are already having impaired energy centers in the brain of an ADHD individual, especially mm-hmm. in adults and women, by the way. We have reduced glucose uptake. Mm-hmm. We have trouble utilizing carbs as energy in the brain where we have critical thinking and executive functions.
Especially after menopause, okay? Oh, you have that to look forward to. I can tell you life from the other side is you literally think, I have Alzheimer's. It's like, nope, this is, well, because of the estrogen dopamine dance,
oh,
right?
Man.
But it's like, but I bet this is even more helpful for postmenopausal women,
it is,
whether they have ADHD or not.
Believe it or not, intermittent fasting comes so much easier in my clients who are over around 50 years old or more. And I think it's for a lot of reasons, but there's so many hormonal changes going on.
Mm-hmm.
The rates at which your body produces neurotransmitters, your metabolism works, mm-hmm. all sorts of things are changing. Even your hunger signals change and the time you want to sleep changes and
yep.
how much you want to sleep changes. And all of that is interconnected. It's all based on hormones. Insulin, I was talking about, is a hormone. Menopause mm-hmm. is obviously you stop making certain hormones.
Mm-hmm.
When we sleep, when we feel hungry, those are all hormonal regulated processes. So it's not just sex hormones. There's sleep hormones, appetite hormones, mood regulation, and dopamine, which we need more of in the ADHD brain, is also a hormone. So it's incredible how everything is connected to what is going on with our hormones, and intermittent fasting helps to optimize that. It's something.
So you can run, but you can't hide. I'm seriously like, oh gosh, this is all so compelling. And I'll tell you something else, and it's just going to seal my fate, is that I've also developed rosacea
mm-hmm.
and high cholesterol
mm-hmm.
just in these last few years since menopause. And I'm now realizing there's an inflammatory component to mm-hmm. high cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, rosacea is all about inflammation. So you mentioned inflammation mm-hmm. is also one of the things that, and I know that depression has an inflammatory trigger and
yeah.
maybe even ADHD as well. So like, is it, I'm almost thinking like, all I have to do is not eat for 14 hours a day. This sounds like, well, it sounds hard, but it also sounds like almost too good to be true.
Like, I know. I'm not even kidding you guys. This is like a magic bullet. Finally, one of the things that we're being taught right now actually stands up to its claims. It's only justified by the fact that it is time tested and humans have been doing it for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And that cannot be disputed. And the benefits are only limited by your baseline health and current struggles. And the reason I want to say that is because intermittent fasting may not be right for you at this time if you are not willing to first optimize your sleep enough so that you're at least getting 6 hours of sleep on a consistent basis. And that's me being generous because I always say 7 or 8. But a lot of people, a lot of hardworking women do not sleep 6 hours.
Entrepreneurs entrepreneurial women. Entrepreneurial women with ADHD are some of the most
worst sleepers.
Another one of my guest experts is a Stanford trained sleep specialist. Why? I know my people.
Yeah.
You're not eating the right foods. You have brain fog. You don't sleep enough. But why do they have to address this sleep first?
I'm just going to say,
first?
Yes, I want to talk about the sleep just a little bit, but I want to also continue on this thread, the sleep. And then if you have underlying hormonal issues that you have not yet resolved, like you have struggling with hypothyroidism or autoimmune hypothyroidism, and if you have rampant endometriosis symptoms, things like that. There's mm-hmm. a lot of stress going on in the body already. And remember that intermittent fasting works because it is a stressor. And so in a lot of those cases, mm-hmm. if you are underslept or if you have a lot of hormonal imbalance going on, it is so debilitating. You can't do an exercise workout like a HIIT high intensity training workout. You can't lift heavy weights because you don't have the power. If you have adrenal fatigue, you're burned out. You can't do those things. Same thing with intermittent fasting, you guys. So back to the sleep.
That's a really, really good point. I don't think can be repeated too much. Intermittent fasting works because it's a stressor. Mm-hmm. So if you're already biochemically, medically under stress, mm-hmm. you're not ready yet.
No. But the great thing is everyone should ease into it. That's the only way I teach it. Okay. And I will get into that before we wrap up here, and I'll send everyone to some step-by-step processes they can get started for free. But it is the gradual introduction to intermittent fasting that's missing in the whole industry. You hear that intermittent mm-hmm. fasting is 16 hours fasting, 16-8, 16 hours fasting, 8 hours eating. And mm-hmm. the problem with that is we don't start at 16 hours if we've never done any break intentionally before. That's like saying, I'm going to run a 5K tomorrow and I've never ran around the block. I'm going to run a marathon in a month and I've never even ran a 5K. You need to train to give your body time to adapt. Mm-hmm. We're talking about your DNA switches, genetic switches, learning how to change your metabolism and the way it works. Yes, it's the way you were designed, but we are obviously dysfunctioning. That's why we have brain fog. That's why we can't sleep. That's why we are struggling with all these things and on various medications, because there are some underlying fundamental needs that are not being met. And gradual introduction to intermittent fasting or more of an ancestral diet will help you get there. Absolutely. And you know what the best part is? And we need this with ADHD. It is immediately rewarding if you take it slow and you learn a flexible approach. Because if I were starting and I didn't see or feel any benefits to it, I would not continue for longer.
We are the queens of immediate gratification. Yeah. It's kind of like the first time I took ADHD medication. I instantly noticed the change in focus. So that was very reinforcing. But with intermittent fasting, you will experience something that fast, because just for a lot of us have been in the habit, especially during quarantine, of pretty continuous grazing. So everything you've said is very compelling, definitely worth an experiment. I like to think everything is an experiment so that I don't try to be too rigid about it. And I give my curiosity a chance to work in my favor. But let's just say we decide, okay, I'm going to do this. Do we have to go? I know we're going to ease in time-wise, mm-hmm. Marissa, but do we also need to adopt the paleo diet as well? Or could you literally just do intermittent fasting, but still keep all your crappy sugar and carbs during your eating window? And what would happen if you, I'm asking for a friend.
You are right in both circumstances. You can do intermittent fasting without changing anything about your diet. In fact, a lot of people are attracted to it because they're like, oh my gosh, awesome. I can still eat an entire tub of ice cream and an extra large pizza every single day as long as I fast for 20 hours. So if you want to do the extreme fasting and jump and dive in, it's going to be a lot harder, a lot less enjoyable, but you can still eat all the crap that you want. Okay. So that's out there. If you want it, I'm not the coach for you. Now, the type that I coach is also gradual. I'm not asking you to throw all that stuff out. I'm just helping you to understand that if you start to gradually reduce how much sugar and how much carbs you have in your life on a daily basis, intermittent mm-hmm. fasting comes so easily and you get these compounding mm-hmm. effects. That's why you get the immediate gratification, because mm-hmm. you take your time, you make these small incremental changes, and it becomes immediately rewarding. And then you continue to adapt, so it comes easier and easier, and everything becomes a no-brainer. And everybody can learn from my Reset manual. Reset is an acronym, and the first R is for reduce your carbs. The E is for eat nourishing foods. The S is for start with 12 hours. The next E is for extend your fast. And the T is for trust your instincts. And so the R is really important. Reduce your carbs. You're not going anywhere near keto or low carb, you guys. This is for the people who do not wrap up a meal without following it with something sweet. This is for the people who have candy bars and sweets in their desk, by their couch, and sit and eat an entire bag of chips in one sitting. This is for the people who have never had a meal that is not between two slices of bread or over a bed of rice or, you know, wrapped in a tortilla. We need to start thinking about food as something that we would, you know, gather ourselves, hunt ourselves. Like, obviously, you're not going to do that. But if it's something that's made from bread or tortillas, that has not been in the human diet for very long. And it takes a lot of labor to make that. If you had to harvest seeds and hull them and grind them and make them into a dough, and our ancestors fermented the dough like traditional sourdough because we didn't have any preservatives, they didn't have refrigerators, there's no way that it would last. And they also understood that that's what was needed for us to acquire more of the nutrients. Soaking, sprouting, fermentation makes the nutrients more available and it's less disruptive on the gut. So that being said, those are treat foods, celebration foods. Those are things like, oh yeah, you're in a bind, you're in a hurry, you want to grab a sandwich, go ahead. But if every single meal that you're having has something sweet or something made from flour, you are setting yourself up for constant cravings, hormonal disruption, and a voracious appetite. You know that feeling when you can't stop eating, even though you're so full, you want to lean back and unbutton your pants and take a nap, but you can't stop because they just brought out the ice cream. It's a terrible feeling. I lived my life being at the grips of my appetite, and I thought that was the only way. I never imagined that I could be free from that. I never did. That's how my whole family is. I thought that was just how life is. And I don't remember the last time I've said I'm starving. I don't remember I'm never even really hungry, you guys, to be honest. I just love food. And I just kind of like, that would be fun to eat right now. I want to eat. Sure, that'd be great.
You know what's so appealing to me, Marisa, about your approach is that not only are you a like-minded and like-brained woman, and you've got a lot of science behind you, it makes sense if you think about the fact that human beings have been roaming this blue marble for many, many, many more years than we've had McDonald's and Chick-fil-A. It's like food was never meant to be so easy, so convenient, and so produced that we literally have gone unconscious consuming it. We don't, as long as it tastes good and it's quick and easy, we just keep shoveling it in, never thinking, why does it take so much more food? Obviously, so much more than your body needs to run its functions. Why do we need so much more if it's so good? Obviously, too much is never enough. Like, we're consuming all this food and yet we're getting sicker and we never really feel like it's enough. If you're overweight, you've taken in more than you need. That's perfectly logical. But why does it feel like it's not enough? And I think the cravings are particularly difficult for people that have mood problems, because let's face it, when it feels like the whole world is going to hell and you don't know when things, if things are ever going to get better, at least a little tasty something or other can take the edge off. Yes. But my clients know, I always like to say all behavior is habit forming. All thoughts are habit forming. All emotional reactions are habit forming. And we very quickly become unconscious. Don't even know why we're doing what we're doing. We aren't even aware of what we're doing. All we know is at some point you're like, I feel like hell. And I don't remember the last time I felt good. Clear-headed, awake, alert, aware, motivated, interested in life. Like I think that mental clarity is something I know everyone listening is like, yeah, I want that. And honestly, you take medication, I take medication. Just medication alone isn't enough. It can help you stay focused longer, but the mental clarity is like, that takes so many women away from pursuing their biggest, boldest, most badass dreams, because they're like, I can get there, but I can't stay there. So how am I ever going to finish that book? How am I ever going to create that retreat. Mm-hmm. How am I ever, you know, it's like, I just keep slipping in and out of mental clarity. And with it comes motivation, focus, energy, and the belief that you can get the job done. So,
yeah, I mean, there's so, like, I know we're running short on time, but there's so many things that you just reminded me of that is important for the ADHDers. And number one, if you already have trouble with binge eating because of your medication, then perhaps this is not for you. There is a problem in the fasting world where people do not make these modifications in their diet to improve their nutrient intake and reduce the sugar and carbs. And they try to jump into the 16, 18, 20, 24 hour fasting and they binge as soon as the fasting window is done. And especially with ADHD individuals who are taking stimulant medication, if you are someone who's naturally underweight already or under eating, then perhaps intermittent fasting is not right for you at this time, because we need to get a hold of the underlying issues and understand, like, if you are an emotional eater to the point where it has become disruptive in your life, you are ashamed and it is like affecting your quality of life, that will make intermittent fasting more difficult as well. But I do want to say that I have found in my ADHD clients who are more like me that they really appreciate the freedom from having to make a freaking breakfast. How long have we been told that we need...
Especially the moms. They're like, exactly. They're trying to feed their kids. They don't even have time to think about
themselves. If you're not hungry, you guys, our hunger hormones are at the lowest point around 8 or 9 a.m. in the morning. Why the heck would we be biologically designed that way to have our hunger hormones the lowest in the morning if we were supposed to eat right when we wake up? It makes
because
no sense.
The commercials tell us, we said.
Actually, John Kellogg's in the late 1800s came up with that slogan that breakfast is the most important meal of the day because he wanted to sell his cereal. But ADHDers naturally, with or without medication, we naturally skip breakfast because we are like a whirlwind in the morning. We're like, okay, either that or you're like a zombie and you're like, I would rather just lie here and do nothing. I don't want to lift a finger. Or you're like a whirlwind and you're like, oh my God, I got to do this. I'm going to be late. I got to go here. I got to do that. And if you have kids, forget about it.
Yeah.
So intermittent fasting actually comes natural. So if you are a nighttime snacker right now, don't worry about that right now. Okay. Don't worry about that. Just try to add an extra hour in the morning. Then if that feels comfortable and effortless, add an extra hour. Now you've got 2 hours later than you'd usually have your breakfast. Then add another hour once that becomes effortless. And that's the pace at which you take it. But I do want to say something important that I actually had brain mapping done, because this theory has never been talked about before, intermittent fasting for ADHD. And I was like, I've been doing this for, you know, like 6 years, the intermittent fasting in my own life. And I was like, I know that when I eat instead of fasting, I screw up at my work. I want to check out. I want to take a nap. And I can't concentrate with my medication. I just can't. And so I met a psychologist who specializes in brain mapping in Chicago. His name is Dr. Sam Afara, and Synapse Chicago is the name of his place. So he did brain mapping, stuck all these electrodes on my head to test my theory. And he tested my brain activity, all the different waves and the ADHD centers of the brain. And he mapped it out while I was in a fasted state. And I stayed in front of him. I ate a salad with sardines, tomatoes, avocado, and cabbage and greens. And I ate that in front of him, homemade dressing. And about 30 minutes later, he did brain mapping again. And my ADHD symptoms were significantly worse. And he was shocked, you guys. But, and so he was shocked because he does brain mapping all the time and he has worked with patients who do better after they eat. So as you know, with everything in health and nutrition and even ADHD, things are so individualized, you have to figure out what works for you. But we are also terrible at noticing patterns in our lives. It took me like 6 friggin' years to realize, you know, that this was a very, very noticeable, like, difference in my productivity. I knew it, but that wasn't enough for me to articulate it. Does that make sense? Like I said, it was immediately rewarding, but I didn't know how to put words to it.
Well, and I think most of us, and you would probably agree, Marisa, most of us are really good at noticing patterns in other people's lives.
Right.
But you are clearly extremely knowledgeable, very passionate, and know so much more about this topic than we could ever hope to squeeze into a podcast. But I am absolutely persuaded that I need to do this. Your enthusiasm for it and the fact that every single excuse that my brain was serving up, you were ready for me with science. Woo-woo will never persuade me, and just charisma, although you have plenty of that, will never persuade me. But a logical, passionate, persuasive argument in an area that some part of me already knew, like, come on. Like, you should not be needing to drink coffee at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Right? Huge. I know better. So I hope others listening will also get onto Marisa's email list. And she's got a lot of free, really amazing resources on her website. She also has a podcast. Before you go, will you tell them about that? And also, I will make sure that we have links to her socials, her website, her podcast, her freebie, and every possible way that you could seek her out and learn more from Marisa. But before you go, tell us about your podcast.
Yes, absolutely. And you guys can grab that reset manual at marisamoon.com/IF freedom, the IFs for intermittent fasting. And my podcast is The Foundation of Wellness. And I really made it to help others learn a more refreshing take on diet and lifestyle. And a lot of the topics go back to ancestral health because, like I said, that helps me make sense of it all and cut through all the confusion. And so I hope it does that for you. And thank you so much for having me here, Diane. It's been fun.
It was a delight.
Absolutely.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Hey, it's Diane. Can I be honest with you? At the beginning of each new year, I always told myself, this is the year I'm going to get my habits dialed in. This is the year I'm going to be crystal clear about my goals and I'm going to crush them. This is the year I'm going to get my shit together on every level and I'm going to do it all by myself. Been there, done that, got a whole stack of t-shirts. But you know, it wasn't until I started working with my own coach that I realized what a difference it makes to have guidance, support, and accountability from someone who's not only like-minded, but like-brained. Yeah, I'm talking about another driven woman, entrepreneur, who also has ADHD and has got it going on. I have two openings in my signature one-on-one 12-week coaching program, and one of them might have your name on it. There's a link to a free consult with me in the show notes if you think this might be the year that you really get serious and go all in on an ADHD-friendly business and life. While you're thinking about that, have a listen to what one of my client's success stories has to say about the difference it made to work with me.
So I remember when we talked about what you introduced as habit stacking, so pairing your habits, and when you did initially bring that up, my initial reaction was like, ugh, like that sounds awful. Like, I don't want to do that. But that was like one of the first things that one of the first shifts that our work together had changed. And that is something that I'm grateful for every day. So the first thing I do in the morning is I go pee. And so what your advice was, take your medication, you know, right after, have your glass of water there in the bathroom. And so that's sort of my daily routine is going to the bathroom, taking my medication, contacts, coffee. Yeah. And it's great because it just cuts out any chance of forgetting, which then would lead to kind of lollygagging around. And I'm like, oh, wait, have I taken it? I should take it. Wait, but this one other thing. And so just that really starts off the day so consistently and well. So that is the first thing. And then with regards to the rest of my morning routine, my best friend and I, we live together and we exercise in the morning now. So we've been doing that for the past 4 months, like at least 4 days a week. And so we do Beachbody and it's just really fun because we do have the accountability of there's going to be someone waiting for you. So your butt better be up.
You've been listening to the Driven Woman podcast with Diane Wingert. Want more straight talk and strategy each week that will take you from spinning to winning? Don't forget to hit subscribe in your podcast player so you won't miss a single episode. Then head on over to the Driven Woman free and private Facebook group community. See you there.